Off the Ball Breakfast.
You would say Georgia is.
Did I say that? You said that. You literally said that.
That's what
Georgia is. Slightly better competition.
Your eyes just told me that. I'm just translating it.
Wow. Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're very welcome along to the Racing Pod. It's Johnny Ward standing in for John Duggan, and Tom Bugsy Malone is with me in studio, and we're going to talk about another absolutely salivating set of cards really on Saturday. The July Cup, the highlight, but so many smart race on the undercard as well, and really interesting Irish runners. And we're going to talk about last Saturday's Eclipse, which was just a race that's delivered in so many ways. And much of the first half of the show, the free-to-air show, part of the show, is going to just talk about an article in the Racing Post that Conor Fennelly did with the gambling regulator, which certainly from this quarter, I felt there was a lot of alarm going on there and lots to talk about. But let's stick to the racing at the start. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Thoroughly enjoyed last Saturday's Eclipse. It was an incredible renewal.
It was an incredible renewal. Not trying to get the trumpet out here, but it was a race JD and I managed to call quite well. In some respects, we were right, but we were wrong. Thought Delacroix would make the running. He certainly didn't do that.
You weren't the only ones. It seemed like Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien thought they would make the running as well, right until the gates opened. So, you know, that wasn't, well, not like it was a totally incorrect call.
We speculated beforehand. I certainly speculated that the lack of a pacemaker could be problematic for both Godolphin horses, but particularly the hot favourite Ombudsman. And that's turned out to be the case, I felt. Ombudsman was probably flattered by Royal Ascot. The race fell apart a bit, even though he was a little bit unlucky in the run. And then this is why I love racing. It's like you don't know what's going to happen the next day. It was a six-runner race. It was somewhat muddling. And Ombudsman, he might well win the race if it were run tomorrow, but he didn't win on Saturday.
Yeah, he didn't win when it mattered most, and there were sort of little videos in the paddock afterwards, and you saw William Buick and John Gosden having what looked like a pretty heated discussion. So,
what would you have done? Okay, if you're William Buick, what do you do differently?
It's very difficult to say what you'd do differently because, like, they went a bit of a crawl and then he just ended up in front. Well, he couldn't sit. Well, you can't sit and wait. And then he went and looked like when won the race. Delacroix, I mean,
Delacroix was hopeless.
Delacroix hit 350-1 in running.
No, like, way.
You know, you're talking about the horse, and even you pause the video and look back about a furlong and a half. No, it's probably 2.5 furlongs out. Like, he's three lengths last because Camille Pizarro has pinned him in when he looks to go for his initial.
Simeon run. Didn't get the memo.
Yeah, Simeon, I mean, you know, credit to the integrity of the sport here, because Christoph Simeon certainly did not engage in any team tactics. He didn't give Delacroix anything. So Ryan Moore had to come back off heels, wait for a gap. Effectively, he had to come back around the outside and just trust for a run. And according to his comments afterwards, well, he wasn't confident until the last sort of 100, 150 yards. Did William Buick do much wrong? Not really. Like, he got beaten. It's not the end of the day. Delacroix is an excellent horse. He's unbeaten over 10 furlongs. You know, he was taken care of in the Derby when he clearly didn't handle things and lots went wrong. Ryan Moore gave, like, the horse, I don't know whether Ryan Moore gave him a brilliant ride or the horse got him out of trouble or a combination of the two, but it was, certainly wasn't plan A, B or C. And, you know, once Delacroix got a clear run, the thing is as well, once you are making ground hand over fist, it was even if he got to Ombudsman sooner, maybe Ombudsman would have had a chance to react. Someone gets you over the top like that, there's nothing Ombudsman's never going to react in time to get into a fight like that. You know, it's a very difficult position when you're the jockey in front, and what, he had long odds on in running, and he just got reeled in very close home. It happens.
Something struck me lately. If you're a racing fan listening in, you might agree with this or not agree. And if you're not a racing fan or you're a floating racing fan, maybe you'll have a think about it. There's something about these Saturdays. It's just like the Curra on the Saturday. I was watching the Curra at home the Derby weekend, and I was the Saturday meeting. There was really good analysis of racing TV, but there was really good racing as well. And there's something about the Saturday and the recent Saturday racing that we've had. And it almost feels, and it was interesting speaking to a bookmaker representative during the week in another podcast. He was referencing Saturday racing versus Sunday racing is actually a big difference for turnover. And there's something about the build-up to race like this on a Saturday and just the buzz. And it maybe it doesn't seem to be there on a Sunday. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
Yeah, well, even you look at what you do on it, you know... Like it feels more of a kind of a natural is a very strong term to use, but you know,
like does it even go back to like you know the 3 o'clock British Saturday kickoffs and
yeah,
this idea
does,
of the 5 o'clock like the roundup of the results or something?
It does, but like you know, to go and you know, your Saturday morning go pick up the paper, scan the form, you know, and then I love that kind of Saturday feel, and then you know your racing's kind of done by 3-4 o'clock, and you can get on with the rest of your activities, whatever you want to do, but. You know, you can go out in the morning, have your kids' activities, or whatever, sit down, watch racing for a bit, and then kind of go on from there. I enjoy it. I enjoy a Saturday racing card. That Currer Saturday, by the way, was one of the brilliant aspects of that was Ryan Moore and Colin Keane going head to head 3 or 4 races in a row. Three races in a row and the 2 year olds, and that was just a
Are you working there
on the Saturday. Yeah, that was
we didn't really have nice. I actually wasn't speaking to you since the Derby. No, I couldn't go on the Sunday. And there were lots of favourable reports about it. I do the whole reaction. There's a lot of commentary about the Curragh and I would say Leopardstown at the moment. I've certainly been very critical of Leopardstown. Yeah. What did the Curragh feel like?
I'm going to get I get
obviously
criticised for this
because
I was there and I worked there. But look, I go to my office every day and I don't feel obliged to tweet and say it's good. You know what I mean? I get paid to do that as well. Like from my vantage point, the atmosphere over the 3 days was excellent. Obviously, the weather was decent. The crowds were good. There were over 11,000 people in attendance on Sunday. It felt like a really fun weekend.
I wouldn't agree with you there. No, I still I think the crowds are poor in relative.
But
I see where you come from.
Okay, if you were to put 25,000 people in the Curragh on Sunday, I don't think it would be a brilliant customer experience.
Yeah.
You would have to create a situation whereby you have something like you have at Galway or like you have at Leopards, at Ferry House rather, where you have, you know, a series of sort of enclosures or places to put people that are far away from the action. And I don't feel the Curragh are just in the position yet to go and put that on. If the Curragh went and put that on, it would seem kind of sparsely populated, and then they would get further criticism for putting this stuff on. And sure, what are you doing? It looks terrible. I feel like they're focusing nicely on the core product at the moment. The people that are getting in through the gate is very strong. And the other aspect of it, there's a couple of little things they put on. They built a new kind of veranda just by the weigh room. It catches the evening sun really nice. There's a brilliant atmosphere
there. Love that.
And then where they've moved, because obviously they made mistakes in the past, they've moved the owner's pavilion to the top floor. That also has a balcony. And look, the 9 race card drew a lot of criticism, but because there were a lot of runners, there were a lot of owners. So that was also buzzing and that added to the atmosphere. So when
that's
you're
very
the parade
interesting.
Room,
that is interesting because if you're not aware of this, the Curragh's card on Sunday with a view to essentially betting in Hong Kong was handy.
Which secures extra revenue.
Yeah, massive extra revenue. Yeah. So it's, in my view, they made the right call here because it was, say if it's worth $500,000 extra, whatever it is, it's worth the Hong Kong betting on the World Pool is worth a lot of money. The card then became quite handicap heavy. There's actually only one group race in the card, which is the Derby. On the other side of that, then you have all these other connections because of a lot of runners.
Yeah. So, I mean, even a sort of back of the flag packet type calculations, you're talking about at least sort of 200 sets of connections. You know what I mean? Just, you know, between
the
all
difference
the,
that makes, Bugsy.
It makes a massive amount of difference. And all those people are highly engaged as well. Mm. You know, they're not swanning around doing, they're really engaged in the action and they're heavily involved and they seem to all have a nice day. And, you know, it was an extra element that I noticed. Because again, another thing that Curragh gets criticised for is that certain connections dominate proceedings. You know, you can have a situation where you have 2, 3, 4 Ballydoyle runners in a race. And while that can add to the quality and while it can certainly help you on the pattern side of things, it may not help on the atmosphere and it certainly won't help on the atmosphere in the owners and trainers area. So look, there are just a couple of sides to that. But that was one of the things I did notice. Look, they're doing a lot of work. It does seem to be a gradual process. They seem to be going about things the right way. And look, there is growth there. And look, I got criticised for saying it was good. Kevin Blake, another person who was there on the regular, he thought it was good. There was lots of videos that it was good. The music was a success. People seemed to have a nice time. I thought it was an enjoyable weekend.
Striking issue or two from Aidan O'Brien defending it, which was rather unlike him to deviate so far from the script of training horses, but it was quite telling. And I'm slightly torn on this because I feel there's a lot of negativity around racing, but I love going to the Curragh, and I love the quality of flat racing. I love the fact that the Curragh has a facility that's genuinely a world-class modern facility, which you can't really say about other racecourses. And I will make this point briefly, and I've made it a couple of times lately. The Curragh redevelopment may have cost a lot. If they tried to do it now, it would probably cost double. Look at the Children's Hospital. Look at everything in this country, how ridiculous it's been. At least it's done. It's done, and it's somewhere to go from.
Yeah.
And you know, flat racing is still a good product. I was at Bellew Sound last weekend, and this is a sort of a segue into my next topic here. Because it's 50 years since Barney Curley and Yellow Sam and that incredible betting coup. And betting and racing are like so intertwined. They are basically like linked at the hip. One will not survive. Racing will never survive without betting, in my view. Unless you're in an Arab country where they can just throw oil money at it, it will not survive. This is why I bring up Anne-Marie Caulfield, the chief executive of the new gambling regulatory body in Ireland. Her conversation with Conor Fennelly in the Racing Post this week. So kudos, Conor, for getting this this interview, which I think is her first with the Racing Press off the top of my head. There are alarm bells straight away here. Massive alarm bells. The headline is, you say there's an intrinsic link between racing and gambling, but it was the same for snooker and smoking, and they found a way forward. That was one.
That's an excellent, and to be fair, I'm putting on my marketing hat, that's an excellent sell for the article, and that's an excellent piece. There's an excellent piece of rage bait and click, you know. Yes. Yeah, you're going to click in that article to find out what on earth she's on about.
Yes.
Unfortunately, for the point of the article, it would seem that it is not really taken out of context, and it does actually reflect what she seems to think.
So she's had this is a difficult job to get into. And Anne-Marie Caulfield CV, she's in terms of regulatory experience, she's been had an HRS stint as CEO of the Residential Tenancies Board, time as principal officer in the Department of Public Expenditure, and positions on the board of directors at the Heritage Council and other bodies. So she has absolute skin in terms of the game of doing important stuff like this.
Like even HRI's own figures in the sort of economic impact of the sport includes those bookmaker turnover figures, includes bookmaker employment. You know, when you look at the kind of, you know, the, and again, these are the reports that HRI use to ensure that they continue to get the funding, you know, the 80 odd million horse and greyhound fund, which is less than we take in gambling money. It's a separate kind of instance, but you know, betting funding and horse racing absolutely go hand in glove. And like you said, if horse racing turnover continues to go down, like the Tote contributed less than 2 million euro, as far as I can gather, to Irish racing last year. An on-course Tote turnover is not, you know, it's not going to keep going. Without using, you know, just using empirical evidence, what you see, the people who are going over the Tote counters are your typical racing fan who are having their couple of euro on the Tote. Like it's not something to look forward to. You know, you say, well, what could Ireland do going forward on this? Could you adapt the model that France have and you just have a, you know, a state backed
monopoly?
That will not work over here. There's no way. We're far too the other way.
We are 100%. And like betting shops have been around, you know, for a long, long time in this country. But I want to defend people who actually like to have a bet here. You know, I'm absolutely conscious of problem gambling. You know, I've been in the racing industry. I'm aware of it. It is a thing. There's no denying that. But the bookmakers have absolutely changed their practice. And now we have a situation where the gambling regulator has brought in this rule that you can't have gambling advertising on racing TV, a racing subscription channel where everyone is watching, pretty much betting on it. It's a racing subscription channel. So you're telling me I can't look after my child in the room because if he might just happen to have racing TV on the corner and they might have an ad for gambling. And there's this idea that, oh, sure, it'll be grand. They can just have an advertisement for all other stuff like Cartier. Like they can have an advertisement for everything. Everyone wants to be on racing TV.
I don't think the marketing manager at Cartier is throwing racing TV into his to his media spend.
People, betting companies who have money are happy to advertise their product with good reason on Racing TV. Now this has been ruled out. So there's a big problem there for Racing TV, which I work for, admittedly. Punters have it so difficult to get bets on now, like regular people who just would like a regular bet. It's been squeezed to the extent that it's actually turning people off racing. And if you were to, I mean, they used to have the Fianna Fáil 10 in the Galway races, and racing was popular. We need to get to a position where don't be afraid to say, I like to actually have a bet on the race on a Saturday. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's so much paranoia now around betting that it's completely gone the other way. And racetrack's future is based on turnover per racetrack as of recent years. And racetracks will close because of the turnover decline. And I'm not saying every racetrack's entitled to be open, but racing's funding is entirely linked to gambling. It's as simple as that. And if the government wants to pay for everything, all prize money, 100%, go ahead. It's not going to do that forevermore. And I found this article absolutely alarming. Let's get back to the racing. We have a cracking sprint on Saturday in the shape of the July Cup. We will talk to Dave Kellner of our sponsor William Hill second half of the show, go through the big races on Saturday, and second half of the show is for members. But this July Cup, I mean, is Whistlejacket the place to start? I thought he was a crazy price at Royal Ascot. It was a strange race, the Commonwealth Cup, the way he was ridden. He found trouble. I felt it was a very eye-catching run, but at the same time, this is an all-aged three-year-old sprint. Three-year-olds don't have a bad record in the race. Aidan has won in a couple of years with three-year-old sprinters. What do you like?
I thought the place to start, weirdly, was Notable Speech, just this drop back to six. Obviously, you know, I just can't have that.
No.
And I just can't think of a single example of when that's really, really worked. You know, that's not correct. Back to like your Mozart or Stravinsky or those horses who are incorrectly run at a mile and didn't get it. Not someone like Notable Speech, who's a proven miler, and then you're going to, you know, retrofit him back just to see if maybe he can, you know, up his stallion value, because that's the only real reason I can see for this.
They did it in the Commonwealth Cup with the horse who's ran so well in the Guineas, whose name escapes me. Let me get him now. It was an interesting as well. Same connections, decided to drop back a miler to six. I'm with you, Bugsy. I don't see it working.
Yeah, I don't see it. Flora Bermuda as well. He obviously made really eye-catching progress at Royal Ascot, but he was a huge price at Royal Ascot. Now he's kind of
Shadow just, of Light was the
yeah, and say. I just think that maybe Flora Bermuda as well has gone a little bit of he's just too short for this. In a Sheeran, I've lost all faith in him at this stage, unfortunately.
Like the movie, which was
There we go. Yeah. Maybe we're moving In a Sheeran the horse back into the In a Sheeran the movie pile. Do you know what I do like Whistlejacket. I actually thought at an absolutely huge price, I thought Run to Freedom didn't have the worst run at Royal Ascot. Was second in the race 2 years ago, has won on Good to Firm going in the past. He's 100-1 in places. I just think for a race where there's so many question marks up near the top, I think near the top, I'm a big Whistlejacket fan. I think the thing that Whistlejacket needs is a good pace to aim at. Hopefully get it here. Ida Marchi, I imagine would give him that. That's, I imagine, why he's here, to ensure there is a proper pace on. Again, Whistlejacket needs everything to go right. He just kind of gets rolling and then keeps going. So that's why it never worked out from the Commonwealth Cup, because he just got shuffled back at a stage and he was making eye-catching progress. He probably passed five or six horses in the last 150 yards. He was a much shorter price. He kind of went to big price and he went a ridiculously short price just as price came out, and then he's gone back out to about 6-7-1 now. That's fair. But like I said, at an each way price, just thought maybe Run to Freedom could be one that might, you know, run into a price.
Hell of a shout. 100-1 available, 66 is with the sponsor, four places as well. And for more from Tom Bugsy Malone, we'll have the second half of the show where he will have his charity bet, which last week when I chickened out a bit. It finished place my selection last week. It was a fair enough price for an each way, but maybe this week in the second half of the show, we will actually have a winner from Tom, who was in great form earlier on in the season. So that is the first half of the show. And if you are one of the members, you can stay with us for the second half, which is coming up shortly.